Yeah, you already know. Come on. You know what time it is.
Hey, yo, I represent Queens.
Please, let them know.
Live and direct from the 718, Queens Stand Up. What's up, everybody? It's another edition of the MI-83 podcast. It's your boy, Joel. I'm rolling dolo without my partner in crime, Ryan. But actually, not too dolo. I have a very special guest today. He is the digital content manager for your New York Knicks, Charlie Widows. Did I get that right? Is that your official title?
That is the official title as of this offseason.
Thank you very much for joining us on the show. Before we get started, real quick background into how I know Charlie. Charlie and I went to college together, and I was his house fellow. So a house fellow is kind of like an RA, and I gave him hell. He wasn't allowed to do a goddamn thing under my watch.
It's an honor to be here. Obviously, also I owe you this for not using your power to get me thrown out of school for any number of dorm infractions that I definitely committed.
Well, if they had cameras up in the dorms, they would have seen that I was just as bad. I just kept it on the wraps. But nah, man, you were on the basketball team, but not your junior year. Were you on the junior team?
I stopped playing after sophomore year. Right. Yeah, but that's when I kind of transitioned to the newspaper game, which set me up for what I do now.
Right, that's great. But you were the star on our Cam Olympics team when I was a house fellow, and I think
I saved up all my energy for that one night of glory every year.
We rode you to the finals. A lot of step back threes.
That's right. Yeah.
But that's great. It's great that you're here now. It sounds like what you do is really exciting. How long have you been doing that?
Yeah, so I started right after New Year's of the 54-win season, which I'm sure Knicks fans remember.
Oh, God.
Although it seems like a while ago now at this point.
Last taste of glory.
Yeah, and you know, like, as you know, I'm a basketball nut, but I spend my free time doing it. I figured I might as well try to turn it into a career, and it's just like, even when they weren't good the last 2 years, just being around the game all the time is so exciting.
Yeah, no, I mean, everyone's excited for the NBA season, even I am. But real quick before we get into the Knicks, so growing up, since you were you're from L.A., did you grow up a Laker fan, Clipper fan?
I did not. Have we not talked about this? I was grew up a Clipper fan, not knowing any other Clipper fans growing up. But my dad moved to L.A. in 1983. Clippers moved there. He was looking for some basketball tickets. They were cheaper, much cheaper than the Lakers, and... became Clipper fans.
No, I mean, that's great. Yo, it's hard being a fan of the kind of like the little brother who can't do what big brother can do. But then when little brother starts to step up, it's just like, yo, I've been waiting forever.
I mean, Mets fans know that as well as anyone. It's watching it develop and then all of a sudden finally become something.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
It's amazing. So, I mean, I can tell you how I feel about the Knicks. I mean, if you've listened to our podcast before, I mean, I think in the beginning stages of our podcast, we talked a lot about the Knicks because we talked about them when they were just really bad. Well, this was last year, and last year was just horrible. And I think all Knicks fans always have some sort of optimism in the beginning, and sometimes that optimism kind of, it's like wearing shades at the club, where everything looks cool, and then you take off the shades, and it's just like, it's really not that cool. And, you know, Melo getting hurt, and just kind of to a point where you're hoping just for that number one pick. It doesn't happen. You know, Phil comes in, throw a lot of money at him. You know, we're like, Phil, save us, Phil. Yes, Derek, this is great. Everything's great. Everything's great. And, you know, last year was really a disaster. There were some bright spots. I think Klee Anthony Early, Langston Galloway. Really liked those guys. It was sad to see Iman go, but you knew it was happening. I think it was always love-hate with J.R. Smith. But, I mean, this year, I guess there is some optimism, but I'm just scared to kind of put on my optimism shades back on. But can you talk me out of that? What do you see so far? What have you seen so far?
You know, this is going into what, my fourth season or something, so every single off season, everyone feels great. You know, inside the team, outside the team, fans, everyone is optimistic about things. looking back, it's easy to see why things went south in the last 2 years. The injuries were a huge thing. I mean, JR, Chum, Tyson, the three biggest losses, all missed huge amounts of games for their injuries.
Right.
And so counting on those guys just didn't seem like a viable long-term thing. And, it coincided with when Bill took over, and they probably weren't his type of players, in terms of whether it was Tyson, who wasn't a spectacular passer as a big, or JR and Shump, who were kind of more pick-and-roll type isolation players. So once he took over, he made smaller moves that at the time you didn't think were really moving the needle forward for the Knicks. But as I wrote in my season preview that I posted today,
I read that. It was very good.
When you look back, the Galloway, Klee Anthony, Calderon pickup, which was his first big trade that summer, were all those guys really fit now when you look at everything else he's added to the roster.
Right.
Lopez, is just such, it's night and day when you see a real NBA center who can pass and can rebound and block shots standing in the middle. I mean, that just changes everything. I'm so in on Porzingis. I think between him, with Melo back healthy, with Porzingis' ability to stretch the floor and Robin being able to play down low, the spacing that those three create together just makes it, all you have to do is play one shooter, whether it's Calderon, Galloway, any of these other guards on the roster, Aflalo. Offensively, it could look so much better than last year, which is a huge tweak. It's just a balance. Bill always talks about, Phil Jackson, when he took over, talked about how floor balance was his big thing. It was, triangle offense is the name of the offense they run, but the principles that they believe in are floor balance, and that, whether that means floor spacing on offense and also having people back to stop transition defense, which is a big weakness of the Knicks last year. We can talk about specific guys, but I do think 19 months after Bill took over, the roster just makes so much more sense and fits so much better together.
No, on paper, it does. Real quick, triangle offense is the name of my fantasy basketball team.
What is it?
Triangle offense is the name of my fantasy basketball team. Do you see Kristaps as a contributor right off the bat? I think that was a big thing for a lot of people who were upset that, we didn't go for Moutier or Winslow or Stanley Johnson.
Yeah.
When you look at him, I just feel like a lot of people just jump every 7-foot-year young European is going to be the next Dirk Nowitzki, and then they end up being the Nicholas Skitsavili. And, Knicks, we just had a lot of bad luck with foreign draft picks. Gallinari is a nice player, but didn't really – we got Melo out of him.
Was a hit. Where he was drafted, I think you call that a hit.
He was. But Frederick Weiss –
obviously, injuries have made it tough for him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Obviously, Knicks fans have some bad memories about that, but a couple thoughts on the Porzingis pick. One, we have a tendency, and I'm guilty of it too, and I fancy myself an amateur scout. I watch so much basketball, I like to think I know some, who's going to be good and stuff, but when we don't see a player play, we, based on one or two associations, we decide he's either going to be really, really great or he can't be anything. We just haven't seen it, so we can't imagine it. And that was the case with Porzingis. I spoke to probably two or three different personnel people for different teams who had scouted him in Spain, and all of them said this guy is the real deal. I kind of deferred to them until I saw it myself in Summer League in Vegas and in the preseason. So that's one thought is it's tough to know when you haven't seen a guy. Number two is this idea that he wasn't ready to contribute right away, as if any rookie or most rookies are. I mean, whether it's his body that isn't what it will be after NBA strength training, or his experience level, he was drafted at 19, he's still no different than most of these freshmen coming out of college.
That's true.
What you see when you see him play, which I'm sure you've noticed, is he knows how to play the game. I mean, he has the supporting skills, whether it's feel, all movement, knowing where to be, kind of the, to take a shot when he has it and not force it when he doesn't. Like, his game is actually pretty mature when you compare it to a lot of the rookies. And the third thought is, I think this is a tremendous rookie class, especially the lottery. I can't think of any guys who I don't really, really like this year. So, sure, I mean, were there other guys? All those guys you named are going to be good players, I think. But when you see a guy at Kristaps' size who can play like a guard, I'm all in. And listen, his body is, he's going to put on weight, but so are all the rookies. I mean, I don't know if Willie Cauley-Stein is any better off on day one than Porzingis is.
No, yeah, I definitely think I wouldn't have been happy with the Cauley-Stein. I think a lot of he got a lot of stock during the Final Four. I definitely wanted a guard, though. I really wanted someone.
Well, let me ask you something. I mean, just looking back on it now, with the addition of Darian Grant and the progression of Galloway and Calderon back healthy, do you still feel like the fourth pick was placed to pick a guard?
Well, no. Now, I think, so right off the bat, I wanted a guard, and then after the Porzingis pick, I calmed down a little bit, and then I was really happy with the Hardaway Jr., Jerry and Grant swap.
Right.
I thought that was a very smart move.
Yeah, popular trade with McMahon.
Yeah, I think everyone gave up on Tim Jr., because he wasn't his daddy. His daddy was a baller, and Tim. Tim Jr. just looks like him, but you know, I feel a little bit better. I think the thing is, seeing how much we've invested in Melo and drafting Porzingis and just having this young backcourt, you don't see it equating to going far in the playoffs right now. And I think I'm talking about me personally as a fan. It's an adjustment to get used to this, you know, because you think after the signing Melo to such a long and lucrative deal, that you're going to kind of do win now moves. And I guess for me, Porzingis wasn't such a impact now. But, you know, there's just so much hope going into that draft. And then I was abroad at that time and seeing we didn't get the first pick and then seeing it was some 7-3 dude I'd never heard before in my life, except for, in the previews. I'm definitely willing to give it a chance. But, again, it's just stun or shade.
To me, the only guy in the draft who was – The mix of long-term upside and ability to play, to contribute right away. The only guy who was more ready, I think, a better combination of all that things, Porzingis, was probably Karl Towns, and he went number one.
Yeah.
And everyone, I mean, that guy's an incredible player, but listen, I still heard people before the draft who were saying he doesn't score enough. His points per game, his rebound numbers were all low because he didn't play that many minutes. So, you know, there's still plenty of people who had questions about him, and you know, I was a fan of his from when I saw him in high school. I thought he was going to be the number one pick over Okafor a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see Porzingis play, he's not fazed by anything. He plays like a veteran, and, you know, he's already put on a little bit of weight. And what they're going to do is he's started every preseason game he's been healthy for. They're ready to let him contribute. And that doesn't mean he's his ultimate self, but I think his spacing he includes provides for the offense is gonna help day one, at least in some way. And the other thing you mentioned was a long playoff run. And it's just not easy to make a long playoff run in the NBA.
There aren't
that many teams for which it's fair to place that expectation on a season, I think.
No. In the East, you know, as bad as it is compared to the West, there are some teams that are going to surprise a lot of people. And
yeah, I mean, there's at least, you know, four teams or so that they think that they have a long playoff run. Right. So that makes the playoffs itself a pretty good goal for the Knicks. Right.
I want to ask you more about some of these players. Before I do that, I want to ask you about, so last year, a big thing that I saw is that just, again, it was Derek Fisher's first year as a coach and trying to implement the triangle offense, which is very complicated and it asks for a lot of spacing. But it's almost like as if the NBA is past that. I mean, if Phil Jackson still had Shaq and Kobe, I wonder if Kobe and Gasol, if that'd be this, we'd be saying the same thing. But I just feel like it's gotten faster. A lot more threes are being jacked up. The mid-range game is kind of a thing of the past. And It just seems like, again, and it's probably because of the caliber of players we had last year, but the Knicks were predictable. A lot of turnovers because people are kind of just saying, all right, they're going to try to run this triangle offense. We know where the ball is going. Do you think things have sped up a little bit? Are we taking more threes? You know, I've only caught a couple of the preseason games, but I know you're there, you know, close up. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think those thoughts are what everyone in the NBA who's paying attention is asking as we end of the season. Like, it's so obvious that the teams that have had success are three-point shooting teams. They stretch the floor. They, you know, push the pace. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true. But there's actually studies that say that pushing the pace is kind of it's something that boosts up artificially numbers, but it doesn't really actually help you out. But threes is a big thing. It's hard to say. I mean, the Knicks don't run an offense that has shooters naturally spread around the perimeter. So the encouraging thing, if you want to see them shoot more threes, is Porzingis is a threat that is unlike most fours in the league, or fives, where, depending on where you're playing. If you're a five, it's even more of a mismatch nightmare. They shot a few more threes in the preseason than they did last year, and that was with guys like Melo, Paul DeRone, and Porzingis not playing as many minutes as they probably will. And they're all 3-point shooters, so I would expect that to go up. Galloway's also gotten much better this year. I think he was 10 for 20 or something. He was 50% in the preseason, which was pretty good.
Mm.
And Fisher talks about pushing the pace, which that kind of happened naturally with his second unit in the preseason, because it was Galloway and Jaren Grant playing together in the backcourt, and then Clay Anthony Early, Derek Williams, who's been impressive in the preseason, these kinds of athletic finishers that can create easy points in transition. I mean, what you saw last year was right on the money. I mean, they could barely initiate offense.
Oh, God.
So just nothing came easy. And I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, Paul DeRone, for the his things that he doesn't do well, he's an incredible floor general. I mean, he doesn't turn the ball over. You can't leave him if you're his defender because he's such a good shooter.
Yeah, he's wet.
And having him back and just to get guys in the spots that they need to be in. I can't remember what game it was. It was one of the preseason games where Derek Williams went off. I think he had three big games in the preseason, but Mike Breen pointed out on the broadcast that every time he started getting hot, Paul DeRone would start feeding it. Which is just like such a veteran thing that I guess seems obvious, but like so many players that are not as good as him would be so worried about their own stuff that they can't really think for other players. And having Paul DeRone back is really going to help the offense. It's just that easy stuff.
Yeah, you spoke very highly of him in your column, saying that he's one of the smartest point guards in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm just a sucker for guards that can really, really shoot. I love shooters. I mean, as you said, I shoot a lot.
Yeah.
So I guess I love that trade and others.
No, Calderon is
a
shooter.
42% is big. What's
no,
that?
Calderon is a shooter. Even last year you saw that, that he can make open threes, and that's big, especially when you have someone like Melo who demands double-team, triple-team at times. So speaking of Melo, we all know what his role is in a sense, you know, the scorer, the go-to guy. But how do you see him fitting in? I mean, everything is essentially built around Melo, and I mean, has he done better in kind of adapting to the triangle offense? Is he kind of ready to kind of, you know, hit the open man to move the ball? Because in the past, even on our 54-win team, and maybe that's because of our coach at the time, Woodson, where it was a lot of ISO Melo, but when things weren't going well, it would just become, you know, ISO Melo, dribble, 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 drive, where's the foul? Dribble, dribble, drive.
Well,
and he, you know,
yeah,
he is one of the most offensive, talented players, but, like, has he bought in, kind of?
Yes. Yes. I think, first of all, when we think back on the triangle, we must have a lot of images of MJ, fallaways, you know, Kobe jump shot, pivot, footwork, you know, at mid-post,
yeah,
all that kind of stuff, which really is Melo's game. I mean, Melo's just kind of, and I'm not comparing him to those guys, but stylistically, I mean, he he operates that way. And you, there was one game in the preseason that really stuck out to me. It was in Washington, and the Wizards had all their guys, and the Knicks had their starting lineup without a flaw. I believe it was Sasha, Vujicic, and then the rest of the four starters. And I was so not used to seeing Melo single covered when he gets the ball in position like that. But they can't, defenses just can't help off of Porzingis and Calderon. And so you see prime Melo with a half a season off last year while he recovered from knee surgery, but he wasn't putting pounding on his body. And he just looked so spry. I mean, the jumper was automatic. He was getting to the rack. I almost think that because of the balance that Phil has put around him, he's set up better than he has in a while. Now, he's become a really good just shooter, catch and shoot guy, which we saw in the 54 win season. The success of the offense kind of hinges on him and Porzingis just pulling the trigger. I mean, both of them are going to get good looks at the trailer. Whether Porzingis is playing the four or if Melo plays the four in smaller lineups, that guy is always trailing the play. And we saw it in the preseason, and it showed it during the open scrimmage the other day where the fans got to watch. They just lag behind, and they can either pull the trigger, which Melo's great on those trail threes, or they can run high pick and roll, which suits both of their games well.
Okay.
So, to me, the question is, are they going to be at their best? Are they going to be better on offense or defense? And with everyone healthy, you can actually see them kind of balanced, which is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, Robin Lopez is not Tyson Chandler defensively, but I think that it is refreshing to have a big man like that. And also Kyle O'Quinn, energy guy, backing him up. But if that's what's going to happen. But I think I wonder how those guards are going to do against, some of these better guards in the East. I wonder how, Aflalo's hurt, but let's say you have a healthy Aflalo, you have a healthy Calderon, how are they going to contain Wall and Beal, Rose and Butler? When Kyrie's healthy, I mean, Shumpert really isn't an offensive threat unless he's open or, has a putback, or J.R. Smith. Did you see
I think looking at the year, if I were to, you talk about best case scenarios with the good, I'd say the kind of nightmare scenario is a flawless hamstring lingers all year or, for a while. And then all of a sudden, who are you starting as a two? And is it Galloway? Is it Grant? If it's one of those guys, it takes away from kind of the identity the second unit is forming.
Right.
So I'm not as worried about individual guard defense, because I'm kind of the belief that NBA guards at this point guards are so quick and so hard to stay in front of that you're not really asking any one guy to stop them. With Wall, it's like five guys need to get back in the paint.
Yeah.
Fast, because otherwise he will get bucketed or find the open shooter in the corner.
He's such a good player.
Yeah, and Calderon's obviously not the quickest guy, but I'm not worried about him kind of directing the opponent into the defense, forcing him a certain way. If their spout down low, I think they can make up for it, and especially if the guards who we're talking about that are playing are going to be able to put pressure on the defense the other way.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me ask you a question. So it's one of these best case scenario questions. So let's say big game in December. Let's say, I don't know if the Knicks are playing on Christmas. Are they playing Christmas Day?
No Christmas. The day after, one of those, yeah. Not on Christmas.
Do you know who they're playing off the top of your head?
I don't. I can pull up schedule right now, though.
All right, well, let me just throw a team out there. Let's say Knicks-Bulls, Christmas Eve, fourth quarter, 5 minutes to go. Who's the Knicks crunch time lineup? Do you think, if based off what you've seen?
That's a really good question. I guess the opponent matters just in terms of whether they're playing it against, a true 4 and 5 combo, which a lot of teams don't have. Hold on, I'm going to pull it up just so we can work off.
Sure.
Okay, so we have Cleveland the 23rd and Atlanta the 26th. Which opponent are we talking about?
Perfect. Let's just say Cleveland, because they have a lot of interchangeable parts. Kind of like a lot of teams are following that. You can make the argument that a lot of teams are following that model, which is why they Cleveland signed Tristan Thompson to $83 billion, even though you can't make
$1 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so assuming everyone's healthy.
Assuming everyone is healthy.
Yeah, I mean, you just go with your starting five, because Cleveland's a traditional five, so it's Calderon, Aflalo, Melo, Porzingis, and Lopez.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, make Kevin Love guard Porzingis on the perimeter. I feel good about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robin Lopez, and is Mozgov, I assume, their starter?
Yeah, I mean, that's who I assume, unless they're not going to play Thompson and Love together. I mean, they're going to try, but we'll see.
Right, and you know, you mentioned that Lopez isn't Tyson, and he's certainly not. Very few players are defensive player of the year Tyson. That was a pretty special player. But he's a different type of defender that could almost argue against a guy like Mozgov. Gives you a better, kind of a stronger presence down low.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Tyson was more of a vertical guy, I think Lopez will be incredible with rebound. I mean, today after practice, Porzingis was asked about his rebound numbers improved over the preseason, and he was asked what the deal was with that, and he's like, listen, my guy is usually on the perimeter, and I have all my teammates boxing out, and what he meant was Robin boxing out. So it just allows him to come up and clean up the board. And Kevin Love's a great rebounder, but he's not 7'3", like Porzingis. So even against those teams, that's as you said, the best case scenario. That's the kind of lineup you can dream on. And as long as Kyrie, well, you know, obviously LeBron and Carmelo are going to go at it. But
right.
As long as Kyrie isn't going off for 40 against Calderon, you can see the Knicks competing. And now, obviously, Kyrie can go off for 40 against almost anyone.
Didn't he go off for? Oh no, that was against the Spurs when he went off for 55, I believe. But he went crazy last year against the Knicks. But, okay, I mean, I guess I'm satisfied with that crunch time five. So another
and your boy from Queens, O'Quinn, is also going to be big time in the rotation.
I know.
I think he's going to make it really hard to keep him off the floor. And that's whether that's going a little bit smaller and playing five and when Lopez goes to the bench, or, you know, I guess playing four with Porzingis and you can cross match and have him guard kind of the bigger dude the stronger dude and let Porzingis guard the other one. You know, he's just the way he fits in on offense with his passing and this newfound range that he's shown off, he's going to be a big part, I think. Probably, in a maybe otherwise thin front court rotation, at least at this point, O'Quinn's going to be big.
I think a lot of people were happy with the Kyle O'Quinn signing. I think he being from New York, he does play like a New York guy. A lot of heart leaves on the court. He went to Campus Magnet High School, who they used to destroy us in track. I ran track in high school, and they were just far better than everybody.
Yeah, and the other thing, just a quick note about O'Quinn, is like a lot of times you hear these stories of guys who are coming home, and everyone makes it sound like you're going to get a 10-point boost in rating just because you come home. And like, whether, you know, sometimes coming home is a bad thing for some guys, or they just aren't good enough players, and like PR story like just trumps the reality. It's all real with O'Quinn. Like, he's the best dude, and all of his teammates love him, and he's always smiling, and like, he is that tough, you know, even though he's like been profiled as this big bruiser type, like, he really is really strong and loves playing down low. So people within the game and fans I talk to love that fight.
No, it's good, man. And I just feel like a lot of people have not been excited to come to New York. It seems that way. You know, I have no insider information. You know, you just kind of, you watch and you see.
Well, listen, I mean, let's be honest. There are certain guys who 30 teams are offering max contracts to that can go wherever they want. And then for most of the other guys in the league, they go where they're offered an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, the best opportunity. And I think O'Quinn's team really thought this was going to be a really perfect fit for him.
I think so. And I mean, you know, I think a lot of Knicks fans were hoping to get, you know, we knew we weren't getting LaMarcus, but at least Monroe. But, you know, I think Phil did spend the money wisely. None of the contracts are crazy. Follow we
Can
have
I give
for
you
2 years.
Take about those guys?
Sure. Which guys are you talking about?
Actually, about the other bigs you were talking about, LaMarcus and Monroe.
Uh-huh.
I actually think Lopez is best fit of all three of those guys for this team.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see LaMarcus fitting in because him and Melo, I mean, they kind of do the same thing. I mean, clearly, you know, Melo is traditionally a small forward, but we have him a lot at the four at times, but they just demand the ball a lot, and I just wouldn't understand how they would fit.
I think you could make LaMarcus work. I don't think the Knicks would have complained had they ended up with LaMarcus.
No.
But, you know, I do think people are mistaking Greg Monroe for something he's not, and we might get the first time tomorrow. That guy is not a defender, and he doesn't shoot it. And he's not a particularly good athlete. And I'm not sure that he's the person that a lot of people, whether it's media or fans, made him out to be this summer. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just saw him as a post presence. You know, we haven't had an offensive big man in such a long time. And I'm not saying that Robin is that. But I think that was the appeal.
No, but like my thing is that, and you were talking about 3-pointers and kind of how the game is going. Unless you're talking about like a Patrick Ewing, who might be the person you're referring to that the Knicks had in the post a while ago.
I love you,
unless
Patrick.
Unless you're that type of scorer, I don't even like running the ball through post offense.
Mm.
You know, Al Jefferson is a really, really incredible scorer and gifted player. But even at his best, it's tough to win because of the other limitations.
Well, he's lost 20 pounds because he gave up fried chicken.
What'd you say? Oh, yeah.
That's the thing.
I hated that. I hated to hear that. Yeah. My take is that you play in the NBA, and you're in great shape, and the reason you do that is so you can eat as much fried chicken as you want. I do not like to see guys giving up on the best things in life.
I know.
That.
There's a lot of them are following that Steve Nash plan. All right, let's move on to coaching. Derek Fisher's in year two. Year one was a disaster. I mean, I was not expecting big things. And, you know, we were losing so much that I was like, oh, my God, this is the worst record in franchise history. And it just happened. And but, you know, with his demeanor, there at times just didn't look like he knew what he was doing. I think Phil should have coached the first. Personally, Phil should have coached the first year, had Derek on the bench, had him watching him. But Phil is really old. Phil can't move. You know, some drama this summer coming in, you know, new players. High expectations, kind of, even though a lot of people don't see this Knicks team really not sniffing 35 wins. Maybe they'll sniff it. But how do you see him with this team? Does he look more at ease? Is he a bit more vocal, or is Derek Fisher just kind of just a silent guy who kind of, you know, calls timeouts only when we're getting blown out? We didn't see much emotion from him last year. And is it...
Yeah, I mean, my thing is, it's really, really, really tough to evaluate much from last year. And that's coaching, that's players. There was a certain point in the year where they were just so depleted by injuries and by, you know, trading NBA veteran rotation players that could have helped them, although they weren't at the time when they were traded. They weren't much help. Here's what I'd say with Fish, is I think that there is a, what I've seen is he understands what Phil's offense looks like, obviously having run it, and he seems to have a grasp on the trends of the league, right? So with the things you were talking about, whether it's a more balanced offense, which involves more pick and rolls, or pushing the pace, or, you know, making sure your three-point shooters are shooting threes. I think he and his staff, who came from Oklahoma City, which was a developing program that had success offensively. I think that they grasp what they want to do, and with this team now, with an offseason to add, you know, 2 first-round picks, a handful of free agents, I think that they are on the same page with the roster. So it seems all we can evaluate at this point is kind of like optimism and the performance on the floor that going into the season. I think in that respect, positive. The other thing is that I think they're a pretty good player development staff to this point. You know, Galloway, he and Clay Anthony, honestly, they look like completely different players this year.
I'm very excited about Early. Really excited. I think last year he was hurt, but he's long, he runs, he's athletic. I'm really excited
about
him.
What I like about him is he doesn't try to do things he can't do. And to me, I'd rather have a guy who has limitations and knows those limitations than someone who might be able to make a spectacular play but is also, you know, forcing turnovers or getting into trouble and stuff like that.
Iman Shumpert.
Anthony is a catch-and-shoot guy or a get-to-the-rack guy. And at this point, that's fine in the offense, especially when in the triangle, it puts guys in positions where you're either putting or you're spotting up. And I think because he's recovered from knee surgery and he's lost weight while adding muscle, just even having him as a bench guy is going to be so much better than last year where at some point he was you know, count on a big minute, he wasn't ready for that as a rookie.
Right.
And Galloway's the same thing. I mean, Galloway might even be more impressive. I mean, he looks like an NBA point guard, which he was undrafted out of St. Joe's last year.
So is Jerian Grant going to be kind of a combo guard, or is he really our backup two guard?
Assuming Calderon and Galloway all three of them are healthy, I think he just kind of views them all. As you remember, watching whether it was the Lakers or the Bulls in the triangle, like, you can have Ron Harper bring the ball up and enter. You know, it doesn't really matter who's the player and stuff. What's cool is that, especially Galloway and Grant, look like they're going to be real defenders. So you can afford to stick one of them at the two against most guys, and they can guard. Grant is impressive to me. I'm still trying to figure out, like, I'm trying to figure out if he's to be a great player if he's a point guard or not. I mean, he just kind of does everything. And he did it in college, and he's like just really mature for a rookie. I think the best thing you can say about him is he's earned like playing time as a rookie, which is with a lot of veterans on the squad.
They are. With that being said, with all the veterans that are on the squad, who do you see as the leader? I know some people will say Melo. Personally, I don't buy it that Melo is a leader. Not saying it's a bad thing. Maybe he leads silently, like a la Derek Jeter. But who is kind of the voice? The voice is kind of like, all right, guys, you know, bring it in. Get back on defense. Help, help, help. Like, who's kind of the captain, but not wearing the C, because Melo's going to be captain. Right. He's going to wear the C. But who do you see players look to for leadership?
Well, obviously we're not with them all the time.
Right.
I don't know if who's calling the players only meeting, if that needs to be called or whatever. I do think Melo, on the court, like, if he sees stuff, he is a communicator in that way. Like, he'll talk to his teammates. You know, he's not in his own world on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think you're talking about is, like, Quinn has really stepped into that kind of a role where he just picks up his teammates literally and figuratively whenever he can, and he's kind of directing, especially, I guess, you know, he's kind of the guy on the second unit. He might be the veteran of that group. He's kind of the guy out there. And I think that's one of the reasons why Sasha is around, Vujicic. There's a lot of European dudes on the team, and he's been kind of a mentor for Porzingis. Paul DeRone has also been close with, you know, he talked about being close with Brant and Galloway as kind of the point guard when I talked to him at camp. It's hard to get any of these guys to find out who's a real leader because so many of them are new.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to establish that in just one offseason, but that's kind of like the encouraging part of team chemistry at this point, is that it seems like everyone's kind of just playing their role.
That's good. That's good, yeah. I think we'll see, hopefully, as the season goes on. I just got a couple more questions for you. So, who did you see kind of have, like, just on-court chemistry? the media really when you watch on whatever you see on ESPN or whatever, Fox Sports or whatever you read, they're really trying to push this Melo Porzingis thing. But who do you see that, you know, the other person knows where this person's going? Do you see that? Do you see a lot in the young backcourt with Grant and Galloway, or is there another combo that we're just kind of not paying attention to?
Yeah, no, Galloway and Grant obviously were impressive just because they're both so young and inexperienced and yet seem to be kind of like in control out there together. Neither is like a prototypical two-guard, really. But I would say Porzingis' feel for the game is so good that you can see him kind of working well with a high-low thing with Lopez or in a pick-and-roll with Calderon. I do think that all of them, you know, everyone kind of knows how to play with Melo. They know what he can do in isolation, and they know how he can find shooters spotted up in the right places. What I'm excited for is once they all get comfortable playing with Porzingis, and once he gets confident enough where when he picks and pops, just throw the ball up and you get it to him. You know, it seems like there are certain points where in the preseason where the guards like almost weren't confident enough just giving the ball up immediately off the pick and pop. Because he's open almost every time because the guy just can't track him on the perimeter.
Yeah.
And for him, you know, for the last decade or so, we've watched Dirk just have no conscience, just take shots because he knows he can get them off. And it doesn't matter if he's guarded or if you're looking at the basket or not. And Porzingis is that good a shooter, and to think of him becoming that confident where he just pulls the trigger, that's what I'll be watching in terms of chemistry. You know, it's almost like it's up to him and his teammates how much he wants to score this year.
Okay. I mean, we'll all be on the lookout. We'll all be on the lookout. I'm just so used to just disappointment. But you're getting me excited about the Knicks, yo.
Well, listen, even if he doesn't step foot in the paint this year, although I do think he's kind of shown a nose for rebounding, or even if he doesn't get his hand on it, but even if he just stays out on the perimeter, he's valuable as like a Channing Frye.
Mm.
You know, Channing Frye, who at his best is like really freaking valuable because he's 7 feet tall and he can make 40% of his threes.
Yeah, of course. And it's also with Channing Frye, it's all about the point guard and about the fit. But
exactly, right.
Yeah.
And I think Chris Paul is obviously a better ball handler than that. He's more skilled.
But let me ask one more Chris Paul question before you wrap up. Mm-hmm. And I know it's really hard to answer. But best case scenario, let's say you're, you know, 5 years from now, what do you see? And he's health is on his side. What do you see him kind of, what game, whose game is he kind of like mimicking the most? And I know it's a crazy question to ask, and I might regret asking it once you give me the answer. But do you see him looking like more Dirk, more Channing Frye?
No, I think the Channing Frye comparison is only like for this year. Like, I think he can be that good right away if he's able to stay on the floor. You know, I mean, like, the last preseason game, I think he had 3 fouls in the first 7 minutes. You know, that's maybe something that it wasn't a concern in the preseason, but obviously once the season starts, that becomes a thing.
And that's normal, I think. It's a rookie.
Yeah, thing. Right. All bigs, all rookies, big. Get that. He's special. He's a special player. And he's a special mentality, which being around enough guys, you realize so many guys are talented. It's who has the focus and who has the kind of long-term vision. You know, if you go to our website, we have post-game or post-practice interviews with these guys. He sounds like a veteran speaking his third language at 20 years old. And he takes it game by game, you know, like says all the right things, but in like the most genuine way. But to compare, he can be great. I think his shot blocking is going to be shocking to maybe people aren't understanding that his timing and his lengths are going to lead to a lot of shot blocking.
No, his wingspan is insane.
When he played against Jaleel Okafor in summer league?
No, I saw that game.
Jaleel bodied him a few times, and then he adjusted, and he dominated him. I think he had three block shots. He was Okafor couldn't score over him, and it's going to be like that for his career. And I think, you know, Dirk Powell, all these guys, he's that type of offensive player.
Well, that's definitely good to hear. Anything you want to plug before I let you go?
No, I mean, we're committed to a lot of Knicks covers this year. It's a really engaging team, a group of guys, and as long as they kind of stay, I think it's tough to say if the schedule is easy or tough to start, but as long as they come out and are competitive, I think it'll be a fun team to follow. All the Knicks on Twitter, that's where we do a lot of stuff, Twitter, Instagram, trying Snapchat. Any feedback, tweet at me, at Charlie Widows. I'm always looking to figure out how we can best share all this great access and content we get from the team.
Definitely. And I will be posting your story on our MI83 Facebook page. Charlie Widows, thanks a lot, man. Hope we could do this again.
I'd love to. And obviously, great to catch up with you. But let me know whenever else I can come back. I'd love to talk.
Yeah, and also let's catch a game.
Absolutely. Yeah, hit me up. I'm there.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Yo, I represent Queens, bam, bam.